I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by ACAST and available to all audio platforms.
ACAST helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.
Hello and welcome to the D&D podcast, where we talk about Dungeons and Dragons for a solid hour. I'm lying to you. It's the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm Matt. I'm the host. Joe's with me. He's the co-host. Say hi, Joe.
Hello.
You didn't do it. I gave you the opening.
I decided to throw a curveball. I've been doing it every week. I decided to change it up.
But yeah. We're here. We're going to talk about stuff. It's been an interesting week for Blizzard and Blizzard games. I may have forgotten some stuff because the stuff I did remember was pretty big and it kind of swamped my brain. But we'll talk about this first up. We found out last week, I think just after the show was recorded.
Literally.
Of course, it was literally just after the show was recorded.
Yep.
Yeah. But Shadowlands has been delayed. We don't know when it's coming out at this point. We know it's not going to be on at the end of this month, as was originally stated. We also know, we now finally actually know when the pre-patch is coming out, which we didn't know. We didn't have a date. So it's like they switched the universe around, and now we know exactly when the pre-patch is coming out. It's next Tuesday. It's Tuesday as we record this. So 7 days it's going to be out. But we have no idea when the actual expansion is coming out. They delayed it for a variety of reasons, which they went into in a couple of posts talking about the game. I'm going to let Joe talk a bit about what he thinks, and then I'll come in and talk about what I think, and then we'll probably talk some more about it because it's a pretty big deal.
So first things first, I do think delaying the game was the right call. I think that things weren't quite balanced enough, not quite where they want them to be. And I think that delaying it is probably the smart thing to do for the longevity of the game. As players, I think we're okay to feel disappointed in that. But I think when the game releases, we're going to be much happier for it. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with some of the other reasons that they gave for it. The thing that I'm not okay with was the onslaught at Blizzard from a particular part of the player base trying to force them to change, in particular, the conduit system. Because players wanted to min-max and weren't happy with... certain players wanted to min-max and weren't happy with the fact that there was a weak cooldown on changing your conduits. So now Blizzard's walking that back because of that onslaught, and I think that that's just wrong. I actually really liked the idea of conduits getting you know, having a bit of a cooldown, having a bit of a decision. I didn't want them to be things you swap between boss encounters because I already did that enough over the last 14 years. So I'm a little upset about that, but we'll see. Maybe it won't be as bad. But yeah, that's the short version.
I will say that one thing I do agree with in their response when they wrote about the conduit change is the idea that the initially too limiting a single weekly reset also fails to draw any distinction between someone who only wants to adjust a single conduit and someone who wants to clear and rebuild their entire soulbind tree.
Mm-hmm.
That I agree with. There needs to be a difference between those two things.
I agree with that.
I straight up did not care that conduits would have a weekly cooldown. It did not bother me, but I am not trying to push high-end content here. I am trying to push it even less than Joe is. Joe is in a fairly stable 10-man group that does a lot of content. That they're not going we're for the first-string thing.
No, but we're actually bigger than 10-man now, surprisingly enough.
Are you up to 20 or something?
Yeah, roughly around 20 usually.
So he's got a stable group of people who push content. I go with my friends when I feel like it. So I tend to do some raiding, but I don't raid nearly as much as Joe does. So it was even less of an issue for me than it was for him. But that being said, the conduits were not the only problem that the beta was having.
No, it wasn't.
One problem the beta is having, and this is real important for people like me and not tremendously important for other people, is that the balance on the level squashed content across the board is not there yet. And it's not even close to there. And when you're trying to push this thing out at the end of this month, which we're already like 6 days into, you need it to be a lot closer to there than it is.
Yeah, especially when that's such a big, big point of this expansion, right?
Yeah. The scaling is not in, it's not proper yet. Hi, doggy that's on the live stream. The scaling is not ready yet. There's a bunch of other problems. There's a lot of stuff that needs to get fixed and done and polished. It's not that the bones of it aren't good. The bones of it are, I think, just the Shadowlands zones themselves are some of the best zones that Blizzard's ever designed. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of interesting stuff in them. They're really beautiful. Even the ones that are horrible looking are beautiful. They're beautiful in their horribleness, if that makes sense. Like Revendreth looks, it is fantastic. If you ever played a Ravenloft game,
oh yeah,
you'll love Revendreth.
100%. Absolutely.
But there's a lot that still needs to get polished and bolted down, and it'll be easier to do it if you're not trying to do it while also the game is live. Trying to fix and adjust a live running MMO versus trying to adjust one that's in beta, huge difference.
We can go back to the days of vanilla when the server would go down because they didn't have a choice because the game was live, and the only way to fix that huge, horrendous bug was to actually tear down the server, get in there, update it, and then put the server back up. There was no backup at that point in time. You just waited, and there was points in time where we were getting refunded days and days of time because they had to do it on a live. You don't want to do that on a live service. You don't. It's awful. In the programming language, or people that that are listening, dev is not prod, and dev should never be prod. And that's what happens. If you're working in prod, things just go real bad.
Yeah, and it's definitely a case where I think that there's enough issues, not just balance wise, but polish and fix wise, that it makes sense. I have no difficulty with them doing this. But I do want to say, for people who are mad for whatever your reasons are, as long as those reasons aren't abusive, you have the right to feel bad about this. You have the right to be upset about it.
Just don't be abusive.
You were told you were going to get this at a certain time. I know people who've made vacation plans over this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've done that, yeah, it really blows. It's really bad. I get, you know, so in some cases you probably can't get that time back. And so you're looking at a week off work that you will not have the game to do anything with. And I get that that's a problem. That's upsetting. But, and I hate to sound like the guy scolding people for getting upset. I really do. But I've seen some real jerk behavior.
Yeah.
And I've seen it aimed at people who are not in any way, shape, or form involved with Shadowlands. They're not game designers at Blizzard. They're tangentially involved with the game. They wrote a book or what have you. When you find yourself that angry that you're lashing out at anybody, even sidereally Blizzard related, you need to do something else with your time. Go for a walk, get a speed bag, you know, read a book. I know I've got a few on for sale. You can read them. Then you can hate me. Feel free to tell me how much I suck. I don't care. But yeah, this is not a decision that was made lightly. There's no way I'm just going to say this. Activision Blizzard is a multi-billion dollar company.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way they make a decision on a release date and then want to walk it back.
Yeah, especially consider Activision and their track record. You take Blizzard, the Blizzard side of the house out of it. Activision will push out a game that's not finished just because they want to hit that date.
Yeah, because they have stockholders.
Yeah, this is a big deal. This is not a light decision.
No, this is the kind of decision that you have to go up to like the people who run the company. And by the company, I mean Activision. You as Blizzard have to go to them and say, I understand that we put out a release date. I understand that our shareholders will notice when our stock price might drop because we do this. But if we put this game out like it is right now, the public relations issue is going to be a disaster. And keep in mind that this is the Blizzard that put out Warcraft 3 Reforged, thinking, oh, well, it's got a few problems, but we can fix it. They have learned from that experience. It may feel like, oh, it's got a few problems, but we can fix it. But it's better to fix those problems before you get it out. Once it's out in the world, you have no idea what those problems are going to start doing. The more people are playing it, the worse it gets. Is it disappointing? In some ways, it's very disappointing. In other ways, I'm actually pretty excited because now I know exactly when the pre-patch is. And that's something to talk about. We didn't know when the pre-patch was.
No, we didn't.
We kept going, and they kept not telling us when the pre-patch was and not telling us. And it was like, when is this game going to go into the new version of itself? How much time do I have to get stuff done? And now we know. If you're playing the live game right now, if you're playing retail, you have a week. Less than a week if you're listening to this recorded. So you now know. By Tuesday, October 13th, you better be done. Whatever it is you want to get done before it changes, maybe you want to get the mounts from various mythic bosses. Maybe you're trying to get your head of the curve. Whatever it is, you've got till next Monday, and then you're done. And I think that's pretty cool. The pre-patch is always one of my favorite times of any expansion. I don't know how Joe feels about it, but I'm going to let him tell us.
I am always skeptical at pre-patch because one of two things always happens. It is either ridiculously fun, or I feel like I can't play my main character for a little bit because everything hasn't caught up with it. So I'm nervous about pre-patch time. It's one of those things where like I want to experience the content and everything, and I'm excited for what's coming, but I don't know how it's going to feel. I haven't been playing on the PTR, so I don't know.
See, for me, I always remember when Wrath of the Lich King got into the Cataclysm pre-patch and Warriors DPS went insane.
Yeah.
As in, it was something like I was playing one of my alt warriors. I wasn't even playing my main warrior. And before the pre-patch, the gear I had, which was pretty good gear, it was mostly the five-man dungeons and the stuff you could buy with like badges and so forth. So pretty solidly geared. I was ready to go into 10-man content. 10-man raid content on that character, 10-man ICC. I didn't do so, but I could on that character. But that character was DPS because at the time I had a tank warrior that was actually running Ice Crown. He was geared to the teeth, but I didn't DPS on him. So I had a DPS warrior that I could have fun with. The week before the pre-patch, I think I said it's like 2,600 DPS, which was pretty good. That was like solid at the time. It wasn't like earth-shakingly good for a 5-man, but it was solid. The week the pre-patch came out, my DPS jumped to 9,000.
Yeah, it was. I remember warriors were broken, ridiculous, guys. Yep,
they were just straight up broken, and I loved it. And even when they tried to fix it, they didn't fix it enough, and we were still super broken. And I remember, I made a shaman cry, trying to keep me alive because there was no way the tank could hold threat on me.
I didn't cry.
You didn't. It wasn't you. We didn't actually play much until the end of Cataclysm.
The end of Cataclysm, yeah. I wanted to make a joke for the sake of making the joke.
No, it was, yeah. I'll say this, Joe's one of the best healers I've ever had. I love tanking with Joe in my group. But that pre-patch has just stayed with me ever since. Even though, and Burning Crusade had a nice one too, because that's when we first got Titan's Grip. So I suddenly had a Titan's Grip warrior. So I was like, yes, I'm going to hit everything. We need you to tank this dungeon. You better be able to tank me in Fury Spec, because that's the only way it's happening. But there's also been ones like, I think the Cataclysm to Warlords of Draenor. It was Mists. Cataclysm to Mist patch wasn't very good for warriors. I think I played my Death Knight more. I switched back to my Death Knight and played that more. And that's the kind of thing I'm interested to see what happens here. Because we're going to have that happening. We're going to see how it actually plays out for multiple people. I've been in the beta for a while. I think most classes are fairly well balanced at this point. I won't say they're perfect. And I certainly won't talk to a class I don't play at all. Like, I haven't played. I'm thinking about spending my 120 boost on a shaman. In fact, I very much want to. But I'm thinking about waiting until it just turns into a 50 boost next week. Because that's when we'll get the new character design options. And that's something we should probably talk about. That's next week. All the new character design options, all the new, the new facial stuff, all of that. That's next week. If you've got a thing you want to do on your character, a look you've been thinking about doing, you get to do it next week. And it's free. You don't have to spend money for the character redesign. You don't have to spend money for, like, I think gender changes in there. Like, you can change your character's gender for free now, too.
Yeah, I think, well, not free, it's cost gold, but I think
gold in game. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, gold in game. But I think the new version of the barbershop goes live. I'm 80% sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is next week. And so that's amazing, quite frankly. I'm happy just knowing that exists. Trying to think what else we should talk. You want to, like, go into detail on the conduit changes, or do you think we just enough to say that they're changing the way the system works? I don't think there's much to say yet. We don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, I don't think there's much, because we don't know what they're going to do with it yet. They haven't really talked about what they're going to do with it, just that they're looking into essentially rebalancing and restructuring it, which, fine. Once we know something, then we can talk about it. But I think right now, just notating that they're going to be making changes to that, and they're also looking at changes to the Maw and Covenant balances, and making sure that gets leveled out as well, because there were some concerns about how those balance out.
Yeah, the Covenant thing, I'll say up front. First off, thank you for talking so I could get a drink of water just then. That was
You're welcome.
In fact, if you need a drink, go. But yeah, one of the things about the Covenant balance that I do think is they need to get closer on is making it so the Covenants feel different, but there's not one that's just head and shoulders above the rest, and you have to take it if you want a DPS or tank. And also, something that I really didn't like about corruption, and I think Joe is actually a better person to speak to about this, but I'm going to bring it up, and then he can expand if he wants to. I did not like that corruption did not give healers squat. Because I have a holy pally, and she got nothing. I mean nothing from corruption. So, Joe, you want to talk about that for real fast and how that might work?
Yeah, this is one of those things where, like, corruption just bothered the heck out of me. It was one of those things that, as a healer, there was literally one thing that I wanted, and it was the one weapon that increased intellect. Everything else was all secondary stats, and that's boring. So I'm just kind of sad that corruption didn't really offer anything for healers. It was boring. It was something that, like, DPS players, even tanks that I raid with or that I group with, would talk about, oh, I got this cool thing, my corruption does this, and I'm just sitting there like, I get more crit, yay. Like, it's good, it's functionally good, but so I'm okay with corruption just going away. I'm not going to mourn the loss of that, and it's not that it was bad, it's just that it didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, and that's happening next week. If you are playing like with a specific build that's like corruption really built specific around corruption, yeah, that's going away. You're losing that as of next week.
And
level squishes next week. That should be pointed out as well.
Yep, you get to experience the new glory of your new maximum level, 50.
Honestly, to me, it feels fine. Like I have not felt much I have not felt bad at being level 50 as opposed to being level 120. Although it is kind of funny to me that as of next week, your maximum level in WoW retail will be 50 and your maximum level in WoW Classic will be 60. Your WoW Classic character will be 10 levels higher.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? It's weird to say.
Yeah, it is kind of strange. Also, one thing I want to bring up just for Transmog Fiends, because I'm a Transmog Fiend. Next week, you will be able to use your artifact in Transmogs that you can't currently use it in. For instance, right now on the... If you're watching us as we stream this, my Fury, one of my Fury Warriors is standing around. As of next week, I'll be able to use the arms artifact appearance for in Fury. So I can be able to have two of the arms artifacts equipped as a Fury Warrior. Or I could use the Fury the double two-handers. I could use one of them on my arms appearances. And while you're thinking, okay, but what does that give me? Like if I'm a prop warrior, I don't get anything. But you kind of do, because you'll be able to use the shield or the weapon separately. So you could actually dual wield the axe from the axe and shield combo as a Fury Warrior, since they're now going to get one-handed weapons back. So this means for every class, like if you're playing a shaman, you can now dual wield two doom hammers or dual wield two of the flaming lava hammer that you used to get as the doom hammers offhand.
Yep.
You can dual wield two of those. Or you could use it as your resto or elemental, you could use the lava hammer as your main hand. So there's a lot more flexibility coming to Transmog, and I wanted to bring that up because it's pretty cool. I don't think they've added in the thing where you can turn off one shoulder yet. They've talked about doing that. I don't believe that's in yet.
I want that so badly because I love asymmetrical shoulders.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely one of the things I'd love for them to put in. I think in general it would be nice if you could like have one glove or one boot. Obviously, some things don't work that way. You can't like have one pant leg because pants are like one piece.
I mean, I don't know. I saw plenty of pirates in this expansion that had half of a pant leg.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's not so much for transmog. We could go into a whole discussion about the fact that the reason that they're called pants is because pants used to be singular.
Yep.
Like you'd wear a pant. Like pantyhose, that's how pants used to work, but I digress. Yeah, there's a lot going on. I think that we're also going to start seeing I don't know when we'll start seeing it is the thing. I don't know when they're going to turn on the pre-expansion event. I don't know if that's next week or what.
Yeah, and I have a feeling they're probably going to, this is my opinion, I don't have any insider information. I would not be surprised if we don't see it go live until like 3 weeks before release.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think it's going to be one of those things because we know that it's going to be ramping up over 3 weeks. That's when they'll drop it, is when we have a release date. We know when it's going to be. That 3 weeks before the release date, we'll see the first bit of that. So we got some time. Got some time before we have to worry about the Scourge invasion.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that will be, it will, the files will at least be live. But we know that one of the things I'm going to tell you right now is if you're a big old content farmer, you're going to get an interruption. I think a lot of stuff that you can do right now is going to be a lot harder to do.
You're going to have to relearn a lot of that, yeah.
Not just that. The scaling is not on yet. Like, it's not right, and it won't be right next week. There's no way it's going to be right so that you can just go and clear stuff that you can clear right now.
But on the silver lining, that might be fun for some folks. That might make things more interesting and require you to actually do group stuff again for some of the older content.
Yeah, I will say this much. If you're a hunter, though, you can get Elagon next week.
Yes, you can.
And there's a bunch of other stuff like that. So if you're a hunter, I know that you can. I know from experience that up to like Mists of Pandaria content was pretty easily farmable on the beta. I was not having trouble. It was anything from Warlords up that was starting to get hinky, as you might expect as we get closer and closer to this level and the compression gets more extreme. Like at one point I went to Warlords on a level 47 character, and Warlords was like level 45. Like I was actually having trouble with some things. So keep that in mind. The scaling is not perfect yet. But I think at this point we should probably move on to them, their emails. Unless you've got anything else you want to add, Joe?
No, not at all. I think we covered everything.
Alrighty. So yeah, if you have an email for this year podcast that we are doing, and once again, I seem to try and move into an Ozarks accent. I managed to stop myself from actually doing it, but it's always the move is there. Please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, or you can hit up our Discord channels. We've got the Patron Q and Podcast Questions channel and the Q Questions channel. The Patron one is, of course, for patrons. And if you are a patron, you get priority because that is why one of the benefits of being a patron. Go to our Patreon, guys. It's helpful to us, and it allows us to do stuff for you. But yeah, you can ask questions there as well. Several questions from this one actually come from that because we were kind of having a slow question week. I think everybody was pretty much like, what's going on? So yeah, you have questions, feel free to ask us. Joe's going to read them for us. So if you don't mind, Joe.
I absolutely do not mind. And if, while I'm reading these through, if you have any questions while for our live chat, since we do record this live, feel free to kick them in there. And if I see them, I'll be happy to add them in as they are appropriate. Our first question, Ouya. Question for the Blizzard Watch show. You are in charge of WoW development. What one change would you do to the game if cost, time are no longer a factor? For me, I'll change current specs selected and do a spherical tree where, depending on the nodes you choose, you can build your character any which way, a la Final Fantasy X, sphere grid, or PoE style. A mage with warrior charge, a paladin with warlock spells, have at it. Go ahead, man. What do you got?
This is something I think about from time to time. Every so often, I think, would I put multiclassing in? Or there's a game. This is a game I played a long time ago, and it's relatively famous, but it hasn't had a new game in years. Remember Dungeon Siege?
Yes. Yeah.
The original Dungeon Siege had a thing where it didn't. It basically was like, if you wanted your character to fight with a sword, pick up a sword and swing it, and you'd get better at it as you went.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted your character to do spells, start trying to cast spells and you'd get better as you went. And they did it for like a bunch of different abilities in the game. It was interesting. I don't know how I'd adapt it to World of Warcraft. The problem I have with all of these kind of questions is I have to stop and think about World of Warcraft without thinking about the way it has always been.
Yeah.
And that's hard because I've played this game for a long time.
Almost half my life.
Yeah. It's, to put it into perspective, I started playing World of Warcraft 2 years before I got married, and I've been married for 14 years. So yeah, it's been a long time. I think one of the things I would consider doing, which isn't as like radical as what's suggested here, for example, it's not the sphere grid or PoE style, but I would definitely consider making class respec a thing.
Yeah.
And by class respec, I mean
roll a different class or roll into a different class.
Or roll your character back to level 1 and get to pick a new class and then level up.
Yeah.
That I would consider that because there's a cost to it. It isn't just, okay, now I'm a level 120, you know, mage. It's okay, I want to keep playing this character who I'm super attached to, who I've been playing for years, but I want to play a different class. Making a thing where like once a year or once every 6 months you could do this once, and that way you get to keep that character. You don't need to have an alt and switch between them. All your achievements would still be there. All the stuff you collected would still be there.
Yeah.
But you were now level 1 and you had to start over again. And I get why not everybody would love that idea, but this is my answer, not everybody else's. I would think about doing something along those lines because I feel sometimes like that would be something I would want to do.
I would do something very similar. One of the things that I really like about Final Fantasy XIV is the job system and the fact that that's exactly how it is. You have one character and you can change the job and level the job. And that's one of the things I appreciate about it. And I think one of the items that sort of holds WoW back. In a perfect world for me, if I had nothing but time, money, no longer being a factor, and I could do it, I would bring a system like that here. And the reason is, it would do a couple things, not just being able to change your class on the fly. It expands the game out for players, right? Because one of the things that you can do at that point is take a look at how experiences earned, how players experience the game, and say, does it make sense with this? And so then the systems have to morph and change or evolve to sort of fit that sort of character play style. And I would absolutely love to see that. And it's, again, it's because if I do my slash played on Loader, because I've been playing him for 16 years, it's a stupid high number that I've invested into him. And don't get me wrong, I like my alts, but the idea of, yeah, so I worked with all these druids, maybe I learned a thing or two, or, you know, I got real up close and personal on the front lines during the Wrath of the Lich King. You know, maybe I learned how to do a little bit of grunt work with an axe. I would love to see something like that, that lets you spend more time on your main, but still lets you experience the game in the way that you would if you were playing an alt. If I could have that, I would probably be exceptionally happy and have far less complaints about alts in general, because I wouldn't have to worry about them. I just play Loader all the time. So that's my answer.
Yeah, I mean, there are other things I think about when I think about this. One thing I've suggested a lot is splitting the warrior class into two different classes. And I've gone into detail about that one before. I don't know that I need to repeat it, but that's something I think about from time to time. There's lots of little things that I would like to play around with. But yeah, I think that pretty much my answer is my answer too.
Yeah. All right, our next question. Hello, Cold Ones. I have a question about Diablo 4. What class would y'all add if y'all could add any class you want? Go hog wild. D&D classes, WoW classes, classes from Pillars of Eternity. I don't care. I just live listening to y'all go. Yeah, so what do you got?
Well, I answered the last one first. You go first.
Oh, and I think this is from Verd. The way these are...
I think he did the next one.
No, because I think he's both. Maybe.
Maybe. I don't think so.
Hopefully,
I'm the one that put this in, and I'm pretty sure Verd is just the next one. He just answered it. He just signed it twice.
All right. Well, either way.
Because he did it on the Discord. Whatever.
That's fair. That's a real tough one for me, because there are a lot of really cool classes that you could probably throw in. But there is one thing that I would love to see in WoW that will never, ever, ever, ever happen. And that is something that is psionic base. Something that deals with mind magic. I'm trying to think of it. Wildstar had one, and it was absolutely phenomenal. I'm trying to remember. Esper. The Espers from Wildstar were absolutely amazing. They were telekinetic, telekinesis monsters. And I would love to have them in WoW. Especially now that, Wildstar's no longer a thing. Cannibalize it. Bring it back. But it was a lot of fun. It was this wonderful idea of mind bullets and psi blades and illusions and nightmares and had this wonderful feel that reminded me of City of Heroes with controllers. Give me that. I would absolutely love that.
Okay, well, your question's about Diablo 4. Some classes I would say I won't say for Diablo 4 because it wouldn't work. And obviously, barbarians are in Diablo 4, and they're pretty close. Like, it's pretty solid. You know, it has that feel of a D&D barbarian, so I don't need that. I don't have to say that. I was thinking about this because I was looking at this, trying, like, as Joe's talking about doing size, and size are some of my favorite classes have been size over the years. But one of the things I'd love to see in Diablo 4 is a more indirect class.
Okay.
We don't have a lot of what I'd call party focused classes in Diablo.
Yeah, there's not a lot of like buff bots or anything like that, because it's not a game
you've ever played D&D with a bard?
Yeah.
Bards aren't what I would call a buff bot. They do have abilities that make their party stronger.
They're utility though.
But they're if you're party doesn't have a high-level wizard, suddenly your bard can play that for you. Are they as good as a high-level wizard? No, but they can do the role. If you don't have a rogue and you need somebody to be doing investigate checks and finding traps, your bard can do it. Not as good, but they can do it. There's something I love about the idea of a class that can do anything anybody else can do. Maybe not as well, but they can, if there's a role that needs to be filled, they can fill that role, with the possible exception of the fighter, like the high melee damage, take damage, deal damage types. Bards can't really do that, but they can do practically anything else, and they can make the party stronger at the same time. Like, they can give inspiration. So I honestly feel like a bard would be interesting in Diablo 4.
Yeah, and I can see that.
The bard is like one of the, my current, like my 5e favorite classes. I've never played one because I know how terrible I would be at it. I can barely handle cleric, and cleric, for all its complexity, cleric is significantly less hard to think about than bard, because bard can practically do anything, just not as well.
Yeah, they literally have a jack of all trades like thing.
In a thing, the bards in D&D are kind of like druids in WoW, not druids in Diablo, who are completely different and are going to come in anyway. But WoW druids, who can kind of do anything, but they tend to do it in a way that's sort of like a ripoff. Bards in D&D are sort of like that, except it's not so much a ripoff. It's just they do it their own weird way, like their spell casting, their party buffing, their leadership abilities, their skill abilities. It's all flavored in a very specific bardic way, which I like. And one of the reasons I'm thinking bard could work is because Dark Sun brought bards in.
Yep.
And made them terrifying.
Yep.
If you can have a bard work on Athys, you can have a bard work on Sanctuary. And like the way that the Athasian bard worked was they were cold-blooded murderers. Because that's how everybody on Athys was a cold-blooded murderer. But the bard did it in a really cool, interesting way. And I think that they could totally work in Diablo. You could make them like, you know, the scoundrel type class that they had in Diablo 3. You could like make them like that, or you could make them like a hype man, or you could make them like a manipulator from behind the shadows. You could do a lot of interesting stuff with it. So I'm going to say bard. I'm going to say I would like something along that, the flavor of a bard from D&D, I would bring to Diablo 4. If we were talking WoW, I have a completely different answer, but we're not, so I won't.
Yeah, I think that was a good answer. Okay, now let's move on to our question from Verdigris. To the witnesses of Demeter's Wrath! Two questions for either podcast. One, I was curious about the population size of the Horde and Alliance, and I thought some of the answers I found, though based on no longer canon RPG books, might be fun to discuss, especially because of, for a time, it was canon. The numbers I grabbed from the WoW wiki page for the Horde Alliance, Stormwind, and Orgrimmar, who get their numbers adding various numbers from the RPG setting books. Orgrimmar at 16,000, Stormwind at 200,000, the Horde at 290,000, the Alliance at 800,000. Never really noticed the Horde was so outnumbered before. Had always imagined them as a much bigger in number. I think all of this is just fascinating. And then two, speaking of Hades, what are your thoughts on one very big difference between it and Shadowlands? Namely, in Hades, whether you are a god or mortal, Shade, you'll return over and over, where as far as I know, in Shadowlands, you've only got one chance. Yours, Verdigris. P.S. Congrats, join your Hades clear. Thanks, Verd. Verd got to watch me as I triumphantly slew Hades. It was great. So, the first part of it, the Horde has always been smaller than the Alliance, but it makes logical sense. I don't know. The numbers are not accurate.
And that matter, I mean,
it might not even be accurate currently.
I think with the addition of, you know, say the Sindarai or the Shaldarai, that they've gotten some big numbers boosts.
The Zandalar.
The High Mountain. Yeah. They some pretty high population groups have joined the Horde over the years. I think that they probably have seen a lot of if you look at the allied races in particular, a lot of the allied races that join the Alliance are small groups. Like, we got the Lightforged. I don't know how many Lightforged there were, but it doesn't feel like it was anywhere near the population of like the non Lightforged Draenei that joined. The Void Elves, that's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the High Elf population. I don't know how many Void Elves we got, but we didn't get that many.
Yeah, and I mean, but to go back to the original thing, like when the Horde was first conceived, like think about this: when the Horde was formed, it was orcs that traveled from across time and space to go from one dark portal to the other and then wage war, and then they were left behind. Then they were in concentration camps. And when you get to, by the time you get to Warcraft 3 with the whole Thrall storyline, he's freeing orcs, but he's got a small number of them. And
he's done enough of them that he could steal boats to get them across, and he didn't have to steal like a couple thousand boats.
Exactly. And then think of the races that he aligns himself with at the time. The Tauren,
the Darkspear trolls, are just a small group of trolls.
Yeah, they're a very small subsection of trolls that have been basically looked down and ostracized across the other trolls, have their own problems, and has basically become almost nomadic in their own right, and as a result have a low population. Tauren, who up to this point were forced to be nomadic, and when you're that type of culture, if you look at it, it's really hard to have a population boon. Even historically, like, nomadic tribes of people, they could maybe maintain. Plus,
you point out they were forced to be nomadic. They're specifically dealing with an enemy that was too mobile for them to fight.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't, the centaur would not stand and fight. They'd simply make a raid, burn all their resources, and run away and do it over and over again, denying them direct combat. If the centaur had tried to stop and fight the Tauren, then the Tauren probably would have killed them. But they realized, we're faster, we're going to keep doing this and drive them around. So yeah, the tribes of Tauren that joined the Horde probably didn't number more than a couple thousand.
Yeah. And then even when the Forsaken joined the Horde later on, at this point, this is one of the whole cruxes of the original Sylvanas argument. Her people they can't reproduce. Their numbers at the point don't grow. They only dwindle. When a Forsaken dies at that point, when the Horde was first, you know, formed in terms of we know it in World of Warcraft, there was no replenishing numbers canonically for Forsaken. There was no mechanism for it. There is now-ish, but that was the whole thing. Like, once we die, once we decompose, once we are in pieces, sorry, that's it. There's no one else to take his place. Even the nomadic tribes, you know, if somebody passed, there might be other young ones to take their place at some point. It was just one of those things where the Horde started way back when from that disadvantage point of being woefully outnumbered. You know, the Alliance had better infrastructure, had, even despite all the wars, had better lay of the land, had, I mean, you go outside of Stormwind, what's the first thing you see? Farms. It is just an entire zone sitting outside of Stormwind that's farmland. They have infrastructure to support a large population. They have mobile military where, you know, before everything hit the fan, before Cataclysm, before all that stuff, they had people that would patrol. They had safer ways to get from point A to point B. They had a structure in place to help facilitate population boons. It's one of those weird things where canonically the Alliance should outnumber the Horde back then. But now I'm not so sure. Like Matt pointed out,
we've had a lot of deaths. We've had multiple wars.
Cataclysm itself balanced that a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think also that, like I said, the Horde has recruited, like, you know, they've recruited at least one race that's got its own giant city. You know, I mean, Surmar by itself probably brought in as many people as Orgrimmar had by itself, probably significantly more. Surmar is a far more advanced city. Surmar would have been like, Surmar was like two, you know, Quel'Thalas's. And they hadn't had massive die-offs. They didn't have an army of undead walk right through the place. They had the Legion, but the Legion didn't kill them. You know, the Legion, you know, had them join. So, yeah, there's a lot to the idea that the Horde has been catching up numbers-wise. And the Alliance, when it's been adding people, hasn't been... Up until the Mechanomes, they hadn't added anybody with, like, a real, like, civilization like that was based in numbers.
Yeah.
The Mechanomes, however... They now have Mechagon is like a big fortified industrial city with a high population. So that might have actually boosted the Alliance numbers somewhat. But the other, like, and also they added the Dark Iron. The Dark Iron have actually a pretty substantial city. I mean, they've been through a lot and they've had a lot of problems with, like, you know, fifth columnists who serve the elementals, but nevertheless, that, you know, the Dark Iron and Cull Tiras, you can't really take away Cull Tiras either. That's another one. So
no, not at all.
At the same time, they've been adding numbers, but I think the Horde has definitely caught up to a degree. I think the Alliance probably still has got a 2-to-1 numbers advantage over the Horde. This is just speculation. This is not based on anything I can whip out and say exactly because of this. But I do think that the Alliance has lost a lot of its numerical edge, partially because if you see the numbers cost of the, you know, at the end of Battle for Azeroth, you see the numbers cost of the war. Darnassus is gone. Thousands have died. We don't know how many, you know, Night Elves took a big hit there. I don't think that they were wiped out. I don't think that their population is like as bad off as the Blood Elves were, but that's a hit. And it's the only reason it wasn't as bad is because Darnassus was not as important to Night Elf culture. The tree is only 20 years old or so. I don't even think 20, I think 10. How not? I don't, 20 in game. I can't. Yeah. So it existed. It was there. And a lot of them moved to it, but there are plenty of Night Elves who live in other places. Unfortunately, those places also got hit. Like Ashenvale got destroyed. Darkshore got burnt. They, you know, the Horde burned their way right up to Darnassus. So they took a pretty big hit. And that's not the only group that took a big hit. You see in Stormwind, people are talking about, you know, after this, we're going to start sending farmers. I think that was Gen who's saying that to Anduin. He's like, that's the last of the actual trained recruits. After this, we're going to have to start sending farmers. And that happened in Wrath of the Lich King, too.
Yep.
People from Westfall went up and fought, and then they come back, and they're like, yeah, we were gone fighting in that war, and meanwhile, like our home area, Westfall went to the dump. Nobody was taking care of it. And that happened. Red Ridge had similar problems. So there's definitely a sense that the Alliance, part of the problem is the Alliance groups are just not as united as the Horde. They just straight up aren't. They each have their own problems. They each have their own systems and their ways of doing things. The dwarves had their whole War of the Three Hammers part two thing going on for a while there. And even now that they're more stable under the council, there's definitely a sense that the dwarves didn't know for a long time if they wanted to be part of the Alliance or not.
Well, the Wildhammer didn't want to be part of it until they were absolutely forced to. Like, they actively avoided assisting the Alliance for until Cataclysm.
Like, yeah, they pretty much.
So,
and the gnomes had their problem that they still haven't quite figured out about Gnomeregan. At the same time that the trolls, the Darkspear, were actually finally reclaiming the Echo Isles and making themselves a home base, the gnomes kind of half did so, but didn't actually succeed in getting rid of and reclaiming Gnomeregan. So in a way, Mechagon was a big deal for them because now they actually have a home base. There's a lot to be discussed on this subject. I definitely do think that, you know, it's kind of hard to look at Stormwind and Orgrimmar. In game, they both look to be about the same size. But if you watch the Warcraft movie, Stormwind is massive. It's very big. It's like Rome or Byzantium or London in the medieval period. It's a big city.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Orgrimmar started out as a group of like tents in the desert, and only got built up like it did when Garrosh came around. Garrosh was the one who was like, let's make an actual city here, for better or for worse.
Yeah, and that's one thing that the game like will never be able to truly show to scale is how big Stormwind really is, because it would basically be, in my reckoning, equivalent to an entire zone,
or Dalaran. We're never going to get Dalaran the way it actually would be, because if you look at the actual size of Dalaran when you go there in game, it's not that big. It's like, you know, there's some stuff, but it's like there's this hub, and then this central area, and that's basically it. And then the actual Dalaran is massive. It's massive enough that they were like seriously talks in game about why didn't they just fly Darnassus over and just drop rocks on Orgrimmar until it was just a ruin. You know, I keep saying Darnassus when I mean Dalaran. That's unfortunate. So scale in game is a little wonky. I don't like these numbers are, I don't know how accurate they are. In fact, I don't think they are very accurate.
I don't think they are right now. No. Again, even in Verd even mentioned straight up that a lot of these are, you know, based off of the old RPG book, which during the time, that was the only source of population numbers we had. So, yeah, having it based off of that, totally get it.
Absolutely. Actually, the next question, I have not played Hades, unfortunately. I've heard a lot of good things about it, but I have not gotten a chance to get it yet. But I will say this. I don't think functionally there is a big difference.
So that
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to comment on it. I don't think there's a big difference. One of the things you have to consider, like, from the video game perspective, yeah, I totally get it. But for me, that seems like the traditional sort of idea is reversed, right? It's not Hades that you can go back to and be reborn from in true mythology. Once you're in the world of the underworld, once you're in Hades realm, any of the three realms, whether you're in Tartarus or Asphodel or Elysium, you're there. You don't leave. That gate is closed behind you. There's a whole big thing with Orpheus and trying to get his lost love out of there and, you know, messing that up because he had one chance to do it. And, you know, now she's stuck there forever.
Or if you know the myth of Theseus, one of the things that happened to Theseus was he and his friend decided to go get themselves the most beautiful wives in creation. Theseus went and kidnapped Helen of Troy when she was like 5.
Yep.
And he left her with his mom so she could grow up into being a hottie for him. That's creepy right there, but that's just a side note here. For his buddy, whose name I'm forgetting, unfortunately, but he was a jerk. He's like, well, I want Zeus's daughter. So they went to the underworld to take Persephone. And they sat down in chairs, and the chairs adhered to their bodies.
Yep.
So later on, Heracles, on his way down to steal Cerberus, noticed Theseus, who was like a cousin, strapped to a chair. And since Theseus hadn't actually tried to kidnap Persephone, Heracles ripped him out of the chair, which meant he lost some of his butt. I'm not kidding. That's in the myth. Theseus left some of his butt on the chair. But Theseus got pulled out. They couldn't pull the other guy out because he had actually tried to put hands on Persephone. So Hades was like, yeah, I don't really care about that other guy, but this guy is not leaving. And so that's like one of the few times where somebody got out of Hades. And the only reason it worked was because he had Heracles there.
Yeah.
And Heracles didn't understand that whole concept of you can't do this and would have actually wrecked the place.
Heracles Theseus is an outlier. To flip that around, the Shadowlands, we understand very little of it, even in game at this point. And we've talked about this a little bit on Lore Watch, and maybe not as much here, but there is a cycle of rebirth, and we see that with Ardenweald, but we don't know how all four of those particular zones necessarily fed into each other and what their cycle was, because the being that could tell us how that works right now is a nerd. So we may have an
of course he's a nerd. He knows a lot about Shadowlands.
Ta-da, dum, dum. But we have a very small glimpse of how that system actually works. But at first glance, as we're starting to go through these areas, it feels like the system is built upon rebirth, built upon leaving the Shadowlands, regaining life, building your anima stores back up, and then bringing it back into the Shadowlands after you pass again.
Yeah, maybe you don't come back as you.
But you maybe still come like back.
Something comes back. There is a return from the land of the dead. Yeah, and there's also like, I don't want to get too belaboring all this because Joe's made a really good point that we don't actually know everything yet. But we know that, for instance, when you're done in Revendreth, you can choose to leave it. It doesn't mean you necessarily come back, but you can go somewhere else. So there's a lot to the way the four zones work that we really are just scraping the surface of. So, yeah, I think it's quite possible that Shadowlands are far more forgiving than, say, the Realm of Hades, where one guy got to leave. And he eventually ended up right back there. Theseus died. He went back.
And all that to say, all that aside, if anybody from Blizzard is listening and you need voice actors, try to get your hands on Logan Cunningham and Ashley Barrett, please. Get them in WoW somehow. Let them sing in-game together. Give me something with them. I'll be a happy camper. I don't know. I think we don't really have time for any more, do we?
Well, let's see. It's 7:22. So we have 8 minutes, and there's one really big one left. I think we can try.
Let's try for it. All right, this one comes from our good friend Shad. I've never cashed in the character backstory option that came with my Patreon subscription because I never felt good about the Blood Elf Paladin I main. The reason I play a Paladin in a race I do not think is aesthetically great for it can be summed up as, I always play a Paladin because I am a walking Paladin. Ask anyone who knows me and knows my fantasy tropes. Also, I had to play Horde because friends. The longer explanation is that I have mained a Belf Pally since that was an option. I'm a loyal person. As an example, I'm now GM of the only guild I've ever been in. And even though the guild is only a roster of friendly ghosts in a community of great memories, I tried a Tauren Paladin back in Kata, I think, but Taurens feel like warriors and shaman to me. However, the Blood Elf is so slight that some armor sets, the banana armor set for example, looks like a tween made it for cosplay contest. I rolled a Zandalari Troll Paladin as soon as it went live, and the Zandalari Troll is the sweet spot in terms of animation and aesthetic, not too big, not too slight. The armor sets look amazing, so now I'm considering a race change on the only main I have ever had. Everything I have ever done in WoW outside of leveling alts and class-specific stuff has been done on this one character. This is a big deal for me, and I can only admit it in the safe space that Blizzard Watch has created, for which I thank you. Anyway, before requesting the character backstory, I would like to hear Matt and Joe discuss whether a Zandalari Troll Paladin, protection if we must be specific, can have a logical backstory that includes every piece of content from BC to launch 8.2 and horrific visions and solo content after that. If so, I'll reach out to discuss that with you. If not, I am willing to listen to your advice on the matter. Thank you. Thank all of you for being my oasis in a world of crazy. First of all, Shad, you are very, very welcome, and I'm glad you feel safe here.
I got to tell you right up front, I can solve this for you, and I can do it in one phrase. Hero of the Zandalar, which was a title that my human earned back in vanilla because the Zandalari showed up when Zul'Garub dropped and made common cause with the Horde and Alliance, both of them, both groups, to stop Hakkar.
Yep.
And that means there were Zandalari in the game, just off the coast of Stranglethorn, right near Gromgol, when BC dropped. So if you want to have a Zandalari Paladin who's done all that stuff, just say that that one Zandalari Paladin was interested in exploring the Horde and reconnecting with, like, the, you know, the trolls that were in it, and he just ended up sticking around for a while. And thus, he got to see all that stuff. Maybe he was secret agent for Rastakhan, checking up on the Horde, seeing what was going on. You know, he obviously wouldn't have been down with Zul. So when Zul showed up in Kata, he would have fought that because he's working for Rastakhan. And you can have that no problem.
And not only that, but like when you're dealing with Rastakhan, this makes perfect sense. Everything Rossi's saying, it makes perfect sense for it. When you get to Zandalar and you're dealing with Rastakhan, they're not ignorant of the Horde. They're not ignorant of the world events that have happened. They talk about Cataclysm. They talk about the great wars that have been waged from the mainlands. There's a whole bunch of discussion about it. Walk around the city of Zandalar. Like, take your time. Dazar Allor, walk through there and listen and talk to some of the NPCs when you first get there. They're not surprised to see you. They are very nervous because you're there because they know what's going on. How do they know that? Because they have people that have been ferrying them information. Everything Rossi said fits that narrative perfectly. Your character, this Battle for Azeroth could have been that return for your character to take everything that they've learned from Northern Stranglethorn Vale all the way to current and report to Rastakhan before we get there, before the rest of the Horde arrives. Reports to the Spy Mistress, reports to everybody, because that was your job. It fits really, really well. So,
yeah. I think we basically have established that, yeah, it's quite doable.
Yeah. So I think that's all we've got. If you want more on that one, Verd, let us know. I think
it's Chad.
Shad, my apologies. I'm so used to saying Vert because Vert always gives us like 10 questions.
That's true.
Shad, if you want to do more of that, hit us up. I'm more than happy to talk about it more. I'm sure Matt would be as well. But let us know. Otherwise, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast for the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Again, guys, if you have an email or question for us, you can either go to our Discord. We've got the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel and the Q Questions channel, both of which you can ask questions on. Or you can email them to us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com, subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know for therefore this show. Thank you guys very much for being here with us, because that's how we get to do a show at all. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast, and Joe and I will talk to you all next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.